Hey, Fab.
Hey, Charles. What's going on?
I'm feeling great.
Me too.
I mean, we've made it. This is the first episode of our second season.
Yes, yeah, season two, finally. After so much work and planning.
Yes,
we're
yes.
Finally recording our second episode.
Mama, we made it.
And, yes, we did.
So I'm like, what better way to start off our first episode of our second season than with a bang here?
All right, we're going to go for it.
So if you're joining us and you've been a part of this journey from the very beginning, we're so glad to have you back, and we promise we're not going to disappoint. So you've tuned into something very special today. So I'm going to start this off with a question to you, Fab.
Sure.
Okay. So are you familiar with the Justice League series?
Kind of. I'm not a big superhero nerd.
Okay.
Kind of fell off, but yes, I know what you mean.
Give me two of the characters in
Justice League. Oh, you're testing me?
I just want to see where you're at with this.
I just don't know what leagues they belong to.
Oh, my gosh.
So, is this Superman?
Okay, good. You got one.
Superman is Justice... Batman? Is Batman?
Okay, good. All right, okay. All right. We can still be friends now.
Okay, all right. I got
yes,
it.
Yes, yes. Those are the characters in Justice League. So, Justice League is coming out with a new movie. And
okay.
I feel like I know the answer to this already, but have you seen the trailer?
I do not.
All right, that's fine. But the new trailer is out, and you've at least seen some movies that involve Superman. Like you're not like completely oblivious.
Yes.
Okay.
A very long time ago.
So you kind of know what he looks like, so to speak.
I know the comics.
Okay, good. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. But this is tough right now.
I know the comics. I just haven't kept up with the movies.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not going to kill you here. But what if I told you that in the trailer, in this upcoming movie, Superman actually reveals that he's Mexican?
What?
I'm being serious. Like, what if Superman revealed that he's Mexican?
You're joking. Like, I one thing I know about Superman is that he's very, very, very white.
He's very not Mexican.
Is this really something that they're doing?
Okay, so I'm just kind of pulling your leg here a bit.
Okay. I'm so far behind. I just started feeling for a second, like, what did I miss?
Yeah, there's like a whole series where he's like, yeah, revealed that he's Mexican. But no, in actuality, he's not. But it kind of begs the question as to why was that so surprising? So, as always, we invite you to take this journey with us as we explore, why does race matter anyway? This is just our opinion.
This is, in my opinion, a course I seed into the sometimes quirky and lively conversations between two friends from grad school. We talk about everything and nothing, blending social commentary with strong opinions, often entertaining, sometimes serious, and all the way civil. You know, the way you wish the world would be.
Okay, so we're back. And so Fab, when I asked you if, you know, you were hearing that Superman was going to be Mexican in this upcoming Justice League movie, you kind of had a bit of a laugh there. Like, it was a bit of a reaction. I'm just saying.
Yeah, a couple of things kind of happened, right? First,
okay.
First, I'm like, that is a big twist, right? Like, something that I wouldn't expect.
Fair enough.
And also, I think that we get so used to these characters looking and being a certain way that when there's a big change, it feels odd.
Yeah, it is a bit of a shock. And in all fairness, I would probably have had the same reaction. But I'm curious, would it have mattered if I said he would have revealed that he was Indian or Asian?
Yeah, no, I think if you would have said he's any other ethnicity or race other than what I have come to know him as, I would have been shocked and I would have thought, like, where is this going?
Yeah. And this didn't even just exist in that very kind of small example. There have been actual things, and particularly in other characters where there's been a change in the race of that character. And there's been quite a bit of a backlash around that.
Right. So even, like, you know, I laughed about it because I didn't expect it. But it tends to be most people are angry when these changes happen, right? So we saw it with like James Bond when Idris Elba. Is he still playing James Bond, by the way?
That's a good question. I think he is.
I don't think he is.
Oh, okay.
But when it was entertained, you know, were really up in arms.
Huge uproar.
Little Mermaid, when Ariel was casted by the live-action Ariel that is not released yet, but she's a black actress. People were so upset over it.
Wow.
And we just see these examples of when we try to change what a fictional character at that looks like.
Good point, yeah.
People... do not like it.
No, they
generally
they lose their
speaking.
Minds. Yeah, and even Spider-Man recently in one of the new animation adaptations, Miles Morales.
Yes, and I did see that one.
It was a great.
It was my favorite movie. Spider-Man out of all of the Spider-Mans. It was so good.
I know my kids watch it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I loved how authentic they made it. I mean, from his accent to his clothing.
It felt, and I think it's because we're New Yorkers. It felt like New York from the music, from the clothes. It was just so New York, and I really appreciated that.
So true. And I think you made a really good point that we're talking about fictional characters here.
Right.
And the response that people give, it's just so strong. But I think, like you said, it just shows how used we are to just these roles being given to a certain race.
And I don't mean to kind of harp on this, but like the first thought I thought of with The Little Mermaid, right, is like we have a hard time accepting Ariel to be black, but we have no problem with a purple octopus lady that does magic and can talk, right?
Yeah. Like it's just, or a singing crab,
or a singing Jamaican crab. How did he get there, right, from Jamaica? So like to me, it's like we're willing to accept so many other things.
No issue with that.
But when it comes to race, we have a stronger we have more challenges around accepting what should and shouldn't be.
And I think it also, which you just hinted at, it also has to do with the main character.
That's true.
Right? Like when you were talking
about they're not sidekicks.
They're right. Like when you're talking about Sebastian, who's the crab, because I know my Little Mermaid, by the way. Like I'm a diehard original Mermaid fan.
I know the songs by heart.
You know, great movie. But I think in a lot of what we've been talking about, we're talking about the main characters here. So when it comes to those supportive roles, they can be whoever, whatever, it doesn't matter. But that main character better be who we think it should be.
That's a great point. That probably explains why people have such a difficult time accepting those kind of changes in race. Because if you are white and you are used to the main characters looking like you.
Yeah.
If you're used to the stories that represent you and your family and your culture. If you're used to heroes that you can identify with because they look like you. Then when you change that, it can feel a bit personal.
Yeah. And I think that even feels kind of like a natural reaction, right? Like not necessarily that you're a bad person if you have that response. I think it's a shift. It's not what you're used to. And I think as we're having this conversation, you know, really a lot of times what we're talking about here is a kind of privilege, right? To have the ability to see these faces and these images, fictional or otherwise, that, like you said, represent you.
And privilege has become like this dirty little word, right? Like when privilege gets used, it is polarizing. Yeah. It is. People have very sort of built-in responses to privilege.
Yeah, I think that's so true. Just automatically, right? Without even hearing the rest of the sentence, it's like, privilege? All right, Amita. So I don't know how many people we've lost so far.
I hope people stay on.
Yeah, stick with us, guys. We have a point to make here. But this term of privilege, and particularly white privilege, has some history here. Peggy McIntosh, who if you know our audience hasn't heard of her before, wrote a very polarizing article back in 1989, back in the day in the 80s, that sparked a long overdue conversation, and a conversation that still continues to this day.
And what's funny is that I think even though she wrote that article in 1989, it became popular in recent years.
In recent years, I know.
Right? Yeah, so like it's really gained some traction in the last, I want to say, decade or in the last 5 years or so than when it first came out.
And so in this article, and just to kind of give a bit of a snapshot here, Peggy is She's both a American feminist. She's also an anti-racism activist, and she's also a senior research scientist. So you know, there's some work here. This isn't just kind of opinion that she's giving, although much of it is based on her own experience. But in this article, she kind of is taking this almost like self-reflective journey, where she is kind of looking at, in particular, she's looking at the impact of what she's calling kind of this male white privilege. She's like looking at, you know, white males and how they're able to navigate the world and, you know, have access to things that she as a woman doesn't have access to. But while she's kind of taking this journey, she begins to kind of think to herself, well, hey, if I'm experiencing this in my own way compared to white males, then who else is experiencing this in relation to me? And are there things and privileges that I have that other races and cultures and ethnicities don't experience?
And you know, no matter what you think of her research or her article, whether you agree or disagree, I think it's such a great thing to always practice that self-reflection, yeah, right? Yeah. To kind of say like, well, how do I show up in the world and what kind of impact might I have that I might not innately be aware of because I'm in my own skin?
I think that's such a great point to make, you know, even kind of how she was open to that journey, right? Because I think sometimes maybe there's opportunity there for us to do that, but that takes a much deeper level of humility. Because again, this wasn't
vulnerability.
And vulnerability, right? She wasn't going out there in search of this. Right. She stumbled upon it. And rather than shying away from it, she further explores it and then puts it out to the public, right?
Right. Like,
I think there's just so much for us to learn from that experience, like you said. But here we are, you know, dealing with this article. And I didn't even give the title of the article up until this point, but it's actually called White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. And I really love that imagery of a knapsack. And she kind of explains it, how when you think of a knapsack or a book bag, you know, it's kind of this accessible and convenient thing that you're able to carry with you. It stores all of your important items that whenever you need it, you can just kind of pull it out. And
right. I think I don't use the word knapsack. I think that's such a dated word. But if I had a backpack or a book bag, right? Not a fanny pack yet. But I think about things that I need that can help me with whatever I'm doing, right?
Right. And they're right there with you. And you pull them out when you need it.
And accessible, right.
Put it right back in. I like to think of it like she kind of created the list for the first Karen. This was like this was like the blueprint for the first Karen.
Well, Karen, another polarizing word.
Yes.
But has become so popular lately. But I think, what she's really is describing, right, is this entitlement that sometimes can exist, whether we know about it or not. We just, you know, by being ourselves, all of us, we have different privileges, advantages, depending on what we're doing, who we are, and what our demographics may be.
Yeah, and just a side note, I love Karens, by the way. You know, I don't want any Karen out there to feel offended.
No hate mail.
yes, please. Actually, one of my favorite characters when I used to watch Will and Grace
was
Karen from Will and Grace.
You know, so they did a spinoff. Not a spinoff. They revived the show.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay.
And I loved Will and Grace, and I started watching it again. And Karen just took a different meaning.
Yes.
As I watched it again, because I'm like, I know this word that we use, this vernacular of Karen to represent a type of person.
Yeah.
And she is such a Karen.
Yeah.
And I got to thinking, was she the first Karen?
Was she the catalyst?
Was she the first Karen that we ever created? But yeah, it was interesting.
The origins of Karen. but there's been some controversy, obviously, around this article. Can we talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I found it really interesting. And we're not going to talk about all the privileges, that's what she called them, mm-hmm. that she identified or named. But there were a couple that stood out for me. And they range where some are like really big and can really have an impact on your life to some things that I thought were slightly insignificant.
So for some context here, she actually creates a list.
Yes.
Of kind of things and areas where she is in her self-examination saying, these are things that I can do as a result of my white privilege mm-hmm. that others don't get the benefit of.
Right. One of like big ones, right, mm-hmm. that can impact how you see or what you have access to is that one of the things she named is that if she needs to move anywhere, that she can purchase a house in any area which she can afford and she wants to live. And that's not necessarily afforded to a lot of people.
Right.
So when I first saw this and I started thinking about it, I'm like, you know what? Particularly knowing all the discriminatory practices in certain towns or states and so forth, that makes a lot of sense. But I think I also think about that beyond race, this is an issue of class.
Yes.
Right? Because if I have enough money and I can buy certain things,
right,
I'm able to have an easier time moving into.
Yeah.
But if I'm a wealthy white person, my challenges are different than if I was a wealthy black person.
True, yes. So although both of those groups may have access to the means to move, their experiences within that could still look very
different. How they get welcomed in, how they get accepted, whether the police gets called or not.
Yeah.
Like all of those things are factors that certain races have to deal with and not others.
Even the value of the home. I was recently watching this, I feel like I was watching it on YouTube, where this black couple was kind of talking about how in their attempts to sell their home, they felt like they weren't getting the actual value for it until they convinced either like a white friend or neighbor to be the front person for the home. And then they were like, the value of the home all of a sudden skyrocketed because the person who was representing
the seller was white.
The seller was white, yeah.
And we see this like in deeper ways in when black people moved into back in the 60s and 50s into certain neighborhoods, everyone's home prices used to plummet, right?
Yeah.
So these are things that are kind of deep and have very deep policies and the way that they impacted what you were able to buy and not buy. And it's still, unfortunately, it's still something that is around today, but in more subtle, less overt kind of way. But she also has some items that are a bit less impactful in nature.
Okay.
So one of them, which I found very curious because I really did not know this until about a year or two ago, and I just felt so terrible.
You should, and, by the way, but go ahead.
Well, she names that she can choose a bandage that is the same flesh color of her skin or more or less matches her complexion.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize.
And you just figured this out?
I didn't realize that that's where bandages were supposed to be. And I felt like, because I am a white Latina, I felt like, oh, here goes my privilege. I'm walking around the world now realizing that when I wear a bandage, I don't even think about it. I just put a bandage on if I needed it.
Yeah.
I don't think about that part of what is that color is so that it could be discreet and it doesn't stand out.
Yeah. I mean, when I saw this, I thought this was a bit more comical, but hearing, you know, hearing you talk about it, you know, I think fairly enough, right? In comparison to what we just mentioned around, you know, being able to move into certain neighborhoods because you have, you know, either the look or the financial means to do so. In comparison to choosing bandages, right? I think we can agree.
Right.
They're not on equal footing here. To be able to kind
if
of...
If we had to pick our battles, yeah, the bandages would go.
Yes. Yeah, fair enough. But yeah. I think even on that kind of everyday small level...
Right.
Right, that there's something to be said in these kind of just... You're just moving through life, sometimes even oblivious to all of the areas where this can impact you because you're just so used to it being the way that it is.
Right. It's like when things are designed for you.
Yeah.
Do you actually think about
how
the other people that is not designed for, right? Yeah. It takes some introspection like she did. Or for me, like I walked my whole life not knowing that.
Yeah.
And then I think recently they developed different complexion band-aids, right? For like black people, brown people. And seeing that, and I remember reading this article of like an 89-year-old man who bought a flesh color band-aid for the first time. Mm. And it feels so small, but all these small things add up.
They add up, yeah.
It particularly when you want to feel like accepted, when you want to feel like the world is for you and you have access to it. So it is important.
It is.
It's just in a different way.
It is. And I think it's absolutely worth mentioning because it matters to someone.
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things that I particularly got from this article was this sentiment that, you know, Peggy just put so eloquently. And what she said was that the power of unearned privilege can look like strength when it's in fact permission to escape or to dominate.
Mm.
And, you know, as we're kind of exploring this conversation, I think part of it is, you know, understanding how this thing can actually play itself in a very kind of negative way, right? That, you know, that one, there is power in it, which in and of itself isn't a bad thing to have power. But sometimes what it's really doing is masking or giving permission for others to dominate.
Yeah, that's really deep. And you and I have had so many conversations around race, right? And a lot of our conversations sometimes for me come from a place of curiosity, because I kind of want to learn more, understand more. And one of the things that I'm able to do is that I get to decide when I want to be interested in race, when I don't,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
When I want to have a conversation and when I don't. It's not something just because of what I look like that is in my mind 100% every day, 7 days a week. It's something that I have to try to think about. Because I have to try to think about, that also means that I have the permission to not think about it, right? Which other people may not.
So as we kind of continue this conversation, you know, what we want to do is really take on this challenge a bit, but kind of look at it in a bit of a different way. And so for us to have this conversation about privilege, you know, what we want to do is really think about how should we be approaching it. But even before that, understanding a bit more about what it actually is. And I think it's important for us to kind of start here, because over time, and, you know, as Fab has mentioned, become so saturated and so inundated with it, we kind of lose its core meaning over time. So I think it's important for us to even build some context to this whole idea of privilege.
Yeah, definitely. And because privilege gets so overused, and sometimes in ways that don't necessarily speak to privilege, it has lost it has been watered down, and it has become this kind of annoying term that is being sort of misused, right? But there's really like this historical perspective on privilege. And when I think about it, like we spend a lot of time thinking about slavery and the 400 years of slavery, but we don't really spend as much time talking about the flip side of that.
Yeah.
And what happens when we spend 400 years being on the other side of that experience. Mm. So for me, in thinking about privilege, I think about all the systemic ways in which as a country, we have not only permitted privilege in its natural form, because privilege exists in so many different ways, but we also created privileges through the policies, the laws, in the way that we treat certain people, right? So when we look at in the heels of the 2020 pandemic, when we were stuck at home, and every distraction that we enjoyed in the past was taken away from us.
Yeah.
And we had no choice but to pay attention. And what we saw when we paid attention, what we saw was this really jarring and tragic difference in which we treat people of different race. So when we think about George Floyd and how he died, and when we think about, in contrast, Dylann Roof, who shot up a black church, and in the treatment that he received when he was arrested, it makes you wonder and think about why is it happening, and why are these things so different?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point to make, that kind of in the heels of the tragedy of the pandemic, it really forced us to do that self-reflection, right? Like, you know, something that we probably should have been doing a long time ago.
Right.
But, you know, like you said, there are distractions there. You know, these are things that we don't want to face. But I think when we did kind of finally take a look in the mirror, we didn't like what we saw. And we're still dealing with it in very many ways, even with the recent storming of the Capitol building.
Right.
You know, and seeing how certain groups, were treated in response to that. Versus other protests that have happened, if you want to even call what happened in the Capitol building a protest, I think riot and insurgents is a far more applicable term. But you know, we can argue over words at some other point.
And it was anarchy.
Yeah,
right.
It was, but by all means. So I think so much of that is really kind of forcing us to take a deeper look at where we stand with this. So, you know, even just from a very basic standpoint, you know, what does privilege actually mean? So let's just even get down to the actual definition here. So privilege in and of itself is a right or immunity or benefit that's enjoyed by a particular person or something that's restricted to a group of people and beyond the advantages of most, right? So this is something that can happen on an individual or group level, and it's something that everyone else doesn't get to experience, right? It's kind of this exclusive thing. And another term or part of this definition that I think is so appropriate to think about is that it's unearned.
Right.
Right. So, you know, it's this idea that this is outside of you. You don't really have any control over this, but you get to enjoy the benefit of it.
Right. You don't choose what color your skin is, but that does not mean that you don't enjoy the benefits of that or the disadvantages of that.
Yeah. Now, you can use it to kind of create other opportunities for yourself, but in and of itself, it's something that's mostly unearned. And so when we consider this, you know, this conversation, the term superpower just felt very appropriate, you know? And when we were talking about this idea of Superman being whoever Superman could be, Mexican, Indian, Asian, right? Like, like whoever, it's this idea of having a superpower that in the very same way of Superman himself was something that he was just born with.
Right. And you know what's interesting in framing it this way? The first time I heard you say that, I innately connected with it. And I connected with it because in reading comics, so I don't know the new movies and things like mm-hmm. that. I'm old school, but I do know the stories of superheroes. And I grew up reading comics and watching like the older cartoons. And in almost every single superhero that I can think of, like Superman, mm-hmm. Spider-Man, even Batman, which doesn't really have any superpowers, but he is a superhero. But Wonder Woman, they all struggled with their powers, mm. right? They all at some point struggle and try to give them up in some way. Yeah. And when they did that, they realized they couldn't
yeah.
because it was who they were. Being a superhero was who they were and they needed to use it. And most superheroes decided to use their superpowers for good. But then in the flip side of that, we yes. have supervillains, right? Who decide to use their powers for evil.
And I think that's such a great example. And even when you listen to some of the creators of the comic books and these characters, they actually kind of talk about exactly what you just said, that, you know, this idea of superheroes and superpowers is really built off of, you know, looking at everyday people. And I think it's interesting what you mentioned around, you know, that internal conflict that they mm-hmm. have to deal with, right? It's like, I get to enjoy something that others don't.
Right.
But now I have to make a decision about right. what I'm going to do with this.
Right.
Right. Like, I can't just sit on it. And either I'm going to decide to use this to benefit not just myself, but other people, or I'm going to decide to take advantage of it.
Really such an interesting way of looking at privilege and the kind of superpowers that we may have depending on our race.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of what we want to be able to accomplish today is helping to kind of give some direction on how do you go about doing that? Because that's not an easy task, right? You know, what do you do with the situations that you're given, you know, how do you manage those things? So what we want to be able to do is kind of take this broader look at a very complex and difficult situation. And just disclaimer here, neither myself nor Fab, we're not experts in this field.
We're not.
No,
just assisting in the world does not make us expert.
Yes, no, you know, we're fair enough. Yes, we know what we are experts at life, but maybe not in this particular topic. I think what is important, right, is that just, you know, others before us, we want to be able to kind of take this opportunity to do our own self-reflection. And this has certainly been a journey for me.
Yes.
As I know it has been for you. And we've been able to kind of learn some things and pull some things out that we hope will become of benefit to you, our listening audience. And so kind of how we can take this in a bit more of a concrete frame and addressing this more from a human standpoint than sometimes just those triggering black versus white conversations that I think have really taken away the progress that we can make in this conversation.
You know what? I just think privilege is inedible. The first thing I think about privilege when I think about myself is that, you know, I am Latino, and one of the most wonderful things about being Latino is that you have such a varied ancestry, right? So I have people in my family who are very dark skin to brown skin, and some of my siblings and I don't look alike like each other, just because we just have so much diversity in our own families. And that is really a great thing. But one of the things I think about is when I was younger, I'm the oldest, and my brothers and I, we lived in Hell's Kitchen. And whenever we wanted to hail a yellow cab, my siblings don't look like me. I used to have them hide around the corner so that a cab can stop for us, because if we were all together, it would take forever.
Yeah.
Wow. And we did this as like without even giving it a thought, you know, and it took until I was an adult to realize how effed up that was. I was like, that was just really wrong. Mm. But for us, that's just the way it was. Yeah. It's like, you know what? We are not going to get a cab. You go out there. They're going to pull over for you. But we never talked about the reason why they were pulling over for me, right? We did never say, like, oh, they're pulling over for you because you're white.
Yeah.
We just know that that's the way it was, and we went on with life. And these kind of things are things that it wasn't until I started learning a lot more that I was able to connect with all of these experiences that I've had that really spoke to the privilege, even as being an immigrant with an accent that I still had because I'm white.
And I think that's such a great example, because all things considered, right, you guys were equal, right? Same family, living in the same neighborhood.
Same neighborhood, same family, same upbringing.
Getting the same income. But when it came down to, you know, being able to get a cab, you were able to achieve that more easily because of your complexion. And, you know, when I was catching cabs, interestingly enough, with my friends, they would also hide. But that was because we were all black. And I guess there was some, like, cab rule at the time where you couldn't pick up too many black kids at the same time.
Wow.
So, you know, at most there would be one or two of us. Usually it was one. And then once that door got open,
and you had to run into the cab,
you had to go
right?
in.
Because they would pull off.
They would pull off.
So you had to be inside the cab to make sure everybody else got in.
But just think about how you had to be well coordinated. Like, that was a thing where you had to, like, you had to practice. The first guy going in knew that they had to go all the way to the edge of the other seat.
Yes.
Because you got to make room for your buddies coming in. And then they got to just quickly close the door. I mean, thinking about it now and looking back, it sounds ludicrous, but like you said, that was how life was. And, you know, so I think, you know, and also what you mentioned before around privilege being inevitable, I think it is an important point to make, because then it becomes less about eliminating it and more about how we actually utilize it.
Right, because if it's something that's outside of our control, right, then how do we completely eliminate it?
Yeah.
And I think it's more in learning on how to utilize it. It's more, I think, in making sure that other people are not harmed by it, right? That it doesn't have this opposite effect where people just have unrealistic disadvantages that prevents them from having the same kind of pursuit of freedom and happiness that the rest of us have.
And so when we think about this in terms of this kind of superpower and this idea of expecting people to give it up, I think there also has to be a bit of a kind of a bit of a reality check, so to speak, in what are we asking people to do? People in positions of privilege or power to say, oh, well, we'll give that up because it's not fair that you have all of this, right? I think we also have to look on both sides of the spectrum and not just how it impacts those who don't have it.
Yeah, because, you know, it makes me think, my least favorite superhero of all time is Captain America. I really did not understand that superhero at all. I can't connect with him at all. I don't like his superpower. But I do.
He throws a frisbee. Yeah.
a giant metal frisbee.
He's got a giant frisbee,
But I do understand what he represents. And there were there was a period where he actually attempted to give all of that up and live a normal life and was extremely unhappy and needed to kind of come back. So I think about, like, you know, sometimes in having this conversation about giving something up can sometimes mean giving up who you are. Mm. And for some people, that is not well received.
That is tough, yeah. Yeah, and that's a tall order, I think, in any aspect. Funny note about Captain America, because I've also heard the other argument about him, is that Captain America is the best representation of America because he took steroids.
Oh.
to actually achieve his goals.
Right, he actually created his superpower. He wasn't born with it.
He was not born with it. But he was chosen because of his privilege.
Yes. Right? Like, we could go down this wormhole all day.
Because there were black soldiers that existed too, but they weren't, you know, and anyway,
right.
I don't want to exacerbate this, but yes. So what we actually want to do is provide some options here and think about, you know, what are ways that other people, you know, I think far smarter than we are, that are actually looking at this and addressing it, and specifically the ones that we think are not being mentioned enough.
Mm.
Because again, I think in this conversation, it becomes so easy to politicize these issues. It becomes so easy to create divides where there should not be. And a lot of times, rather than actually addressing the issue, it just becomes an argument. It just becomes something to find a side to stand on. No one's actually even thinking about the impact of it. No one's even doing any research or thinking for themselves. They're just kind of following the line. And it's like, okay, you go left and you go right.
Yes, absolutely.
And so what we did was we found kind of three arguments that we want to share with you. And so the first part of this is the actual term itself, right? So that the idea of using this term privilege can oftentimes be counterproductive because, one, it can be very triggering, and two, essentially, it's inaccurate.
I gotta be honest. Before I became familiarized with the term white privilege, I thought of privilege as wealth, right? So privilege, like if I thought of privileged people, I thought these were people that went to boarding schools and prep schools. And that's what I associated with privilege until it was really redefined. So I think like even the word privilege has this double meaning, or almost like this taboo that is carrying in addition to the privilege of race.
Yeah. So the first part of this is kind of changing it from this conversation of privilege to instead talking about it in terms of an advantage.
Mm.
And what that does is it makes it a little bit more concrete, right? So rather than becoming this kind of broad, big out there, you know, idea that no one has control over and can't do anything to change it, if we use it in a term of advantage, we can kind of pinpoint it a bit more and identify the areas where this advantage is taking place and what adjustments we can make to it.
I think it removes this idea of prestige, right? Like we have a different relationship with the word privilege than we do with the word advantage. I think in areas of my life where I have had advantages, right? Years ago, I went for a job interview and I knew several people that worked there and that were in a position to make decisions. And that was an advantage that I had in comparison to any other applicants.
Right.
So how I related to my accomplishment of getting the job as opposed to those who didn't get it was very, very differently. I'm able to understand, well, I had a foot in the door.
Yeah.
And that didn't necessarily, well, that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. But it also, in the inverse effect, didn't mean that the people who didn't get the job weren't good enough.
Yes. Yeah. Right. I think using it in that way doesn't diminish the accomplishments of others. Right.
Right.
And you aren't putting yourself up on this pedestal, you know, and kind of saying to yourself, well, I'm better than everyone else.
Right. Exactly.
Right. It's like, no, like I have this extra thing here. And so one of the things we wanted to look at, you know, kind of after we talk about that reframing was the study that was done by Ashley Shelby Rosette, who is a senior associate dean of executive MBA and non-degree programs. I want to give this woman all of her flowers at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business.
That is a mouthful.
I'm like, go ahead, sister. She earned all of that. And this was a really interesting study that was done. Part of this is in kind of using more appropriate language. But then the other part is how you actually give that language to others determines how they're actually going to respond to it.
Yes. And that is so important. And I think you know this just from being married or in any kind of relationship that you have, that is not necessarily what you're talking about, is how you're talking about it, right? So you probably have gotten in second fights, or I know I have, where we started about one thing and then the fight became about the tone or about a certain word that was used. Yeah. And that's very real, right? There are certain words and things that can make us defensive or that can just really shut us down to actually understanding something that could potentially be very valid.
Yeah, or you've kind of been in that situation where you're like in an argument with someone and you're saying something and then someone else comes by and says the same thing.
The exact same thing, and yes.
in a different way and gets a totally different response and you're just like, but I was saying the same thing. And it's
right.
like,
and we're like, no, you weren't.
Right? Yeah. So all of those things matter and make such a difference. And it's funny because we get that on that level.
Right.
But then on these bigger complex things, we're like, oh, that doesn't matter. And it's right. like, no, of course it does.
It's all relational. Yes. And we have to give that same level of introspection and intention to it if we want people to help us come further along.
Right. So in this study that Ashley and her team conducted, what they were looking at was kind of how the reframing of this conversation of privilege, using more so the term advantage and disadvantage, was going to have an impact. Looking at individuals, and they were proposing, or at least asking themselves, if this has an effect on groups, would that also translate to the individual, right? Mm. Because there are certain dynamics that happen when you talk about including multiple people or...
Right, there's groupthink.
Groupthink, right? Mob mentality, right? There are just different aspects that happen with a larger body of people than on an individual level. So they wanted to test this on kind of a more everyday conversational situation. So what they did in this study was they involved 199, which I think is a really interesting number that they didn't just go for 200. Like they couldn't find one more. But they asked 199 white participants to imagine that they were sales associates.
Okay.
And in this scenario, they received a performance bonus. Okay.
And everybody likes that.
And they were told that an audit had found that the company had assigned sales opportunities unfairly based on race.
Mm.
So everyone, you know, so
all hell broke loose in the company.
So then they were given the opportunity to share some of their bonuses. I don't know what you would have done, Fab, but I'd have been like, what?
It depends how much I was making, right?
Like
if I was living paycheck to paycheck and I got this bonus and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be able to pay this bill this month, I'll have a harder time sharing that.
Well, you know what? I would have probably been in that meeting like, it wouldn't matter because I would have already spent it. Right. So yeah, sure.
It's like, I think you got to find more money.
Oops, you know. Yeah. But you know, I think that's interesting, and even just thinking about that scenario, I'm like, man, that's a bit tough there. Like,
right.
You know, you've already gotten this bonus, or you've been told that you're going to receive
it. And it involves like the two most polarizing things: money and race.
Yes, yes.
You know,
and right within the sales field, right? Because that's a hardworking field.
Yeah.
So, you know, so what they ended up finding out was participants who were told a specific Black colleague had been unfairly disadvantaged by the policies were willing to give up more of their bonus than those who were told that they had been given an unfair advantage because they were white.
And that, you know what, it takes sometimes research to show us things that just seem like common sense, because that makes like so much sense to me. Mm. Particularly if I work hard. Right.
Yeah.
And I earned this. What do you mean I got an advantage? As opposed to saying like, well, this person earned it and they got a disadvantage. You're able to connect with it a little bit differently. Because when you say to someone that they had an advantage and they work really hard for something, it makes it just that much harder for them to believe it.
Yes. And that really speaks to the sentiment and to what the research found. And I want to say this exactly because I want to make sure that I capture this in kind of plain English, because it is a bit to kind of wrap your mind around. But essentially, it was about kind of framing it not so much as you received something unfairly, versus someone was shortchanged.
Right.
Right. So kind of making that distinction.
Very different things.
Has a much different response rate. And not just a response, but a willingness to make the change. And that's what this is about is, and I remember in our communications class, our professor was always saying, it's about the change.
Right.
Like you could make the best commercial in the world. It could be the funniest, it could be the most viewed, but if it doesn't actually lead to change, if it doesn't lead to people buying your product or listening to your music, then it's for nothing. And so I think it's interesting how this brought about actual change. People weren't just like, oh yeah, that sounds like a good thing, but they were actually willing to move forward and do it.
And sometimes it becomes about ego, right? Or it becomes about like old principles. But if the ultimate outcome is, this is where we need to be, or this is what the change that needs to happen. It's really about looking about what road do we need to drive by to get there.
Yeah.
That would be the easiest road. Not necessarily, well, I'm taking this road because that's the road I always taken, even though it's a road that you might not get there at all.
Yes, very, 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 very true. And so what Ashley and her team found is that it says when we frame inequity as a person's undeserved privilege, that person tends to justify their status by talking down to the other party, just like you said. And so describing the colleague as, even going as far as describing the colleague as lazy and incompetent. So they were really just trying to like drive home.
They're trying to hold on to that money.
They're trying to hold on to it. And at the same time, make themselves feel better about holding on to the money.
Right.
Right, which is producing less change.
That's really an interesting way of looking at it. You know, I need to spend some more time thinking about this, but I do like reframing the word privilege and talking a little bit more about disadvantages as opposed to focusing on the advantages that people may have that they can or cannot control.
Yeah. And so it says that the disparagement then justifies their decision not to share their rewards, even though they were unfairly distributed in the first place, right? So it kind of goes back to like, keep in mind that you haven't, like earned this. Like yes, you've earned it because you've worked for it, but you haven't earned it more than others.
Right.
But because of how it's being framed and addressed to you, you're now creating all these scenarios of why it belongs to you solely and not to anyone else.
One of the things that has become really popular in the recent months is that a lot of like Generation Z's are like going to TikTok and talking to their parents about privilege and just seeing their response. And the common pattern or trend tends to be that most like working class parents are saying like privilege.
Yeah.
What privilege did I have? I had nothing. I worked my way up. Right. So really, for that, those same kids that want to have those conversations with their parents and wonder if they would have a different result. And instead of them talking about the unearned privileges that their parents have, they can talk about, I want to talk about some of the disadvantages that some people have had that are holding them back.
Yeah. And I think about this even on a policy level.
Yes.
Right? And kind of how this conversation is happening and being brought to the table. Because oftentimes the people in positions to change these policies are particularly people who have experienced advantages. So it's like we're asking, right? It's like you have to ask the group or bring it to the group that's experiencing the advantages to then be able to say, hey, this should happen to others and not just to yourself, right?
Right.
But how that's said and how that's done matters. And I think that's the key here.
And I think what you're talking about is that you're not giving, the person with the advantage is not giving up their advantage.
Yes.
We're just helping someone else to gain it.
Yeah.
And I think when we talk about privilege, I think what I hear often is how much are you willing to give up?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And it's like you said earlier, it's like, what superhero is going to give up their superpower? Yeah. And I think that really taps into this idea. It's like you don't have to give up anything, but we're going to bring other people back up to that same level.
No, I think that's a really, really great point. So the second argument in kind of addressing this issue of privilege, I think, is around understanding, and we've talked a little bit about this, but we want to go into some more depth, is about the nuance of it, right? That it's not just kind of this blanket thing, and although privilege itself creates that blanket perspective, it's far, far more nuanced than that. And so we looked at an article by written by someone by the name of Gina, who is writing about her own personal experience. And interestingly enough, she is almost writing in response or in reference to Peggy McIntosh's article about white privilege, because she herself is a white woman and was really having a hard time digesting what Peggy was talking about. One of the things that she references and in the article that she writes is actually titled White Privilege, Explaining White Privilege to a Broke White Person.
Right.
And this goes back to what you mentioned before, Fab, about how a lot of, you know, what Peggy wrote in her article can actually be seen more as a conversation of class than it really is about race or about white privilege.
Yeah, and I actually enjoy reading this article because it gave me like a really good perspective, but really understanding that you know, if you're a broke white person,
yeah,
the same amount of privilege that you have in comparison to someone who is extremely wealthy is a little bit different.
Yeah, it's very
different. And I think that sometimes we interchange race and class. And I think part of the reason, when I was reflecting on this article, part of the reason we do that is that so much of class and race have been intertwined,
yeah,
because of, through the history of our country. So when we look at even income inequities, right, in our country, the medium, I think, salary for white people is around
$80,000,
yeah, and it changes, it varies by state. But for blacks, it's around $25,000 to $40,000, depending on what state you're on. So for when you look at that, it you're forced to wonder why. And yeah, why are so many black people living in poverty? And part of it is because class and racism and classism have all been intertwined.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to distinguish.
And I think, you know, this brings up the term intersectionality, right? And I think part of it is also that when we use these terms of privilege, it in some ways, it doesn't encourage us to dig any deeper than that, right? It's kind of like, okay, that's privilege, you know, but without understanding more of the intricacies of what's actually taking place. So I particularly found this article and this perspective, an interesting one, a white woman responding to another white woman and saying, I don't relate to you.
Right.
Like,
right.
And when you read the article, she actually starts the article by saying, by asking questions of like, did you have to experience cold weather living in a trailer? Did mm-hmm. you have to experience, she uses one example of having moved so many, transferring from so many elementary schools that she can only remember like a percentage of the names.
Right.
Or being the first one in her family to go to college and not having anyone around her graduate past high school. And so, she's saying, hey, I don't have this same experience. And then she's talking about how do I then internalize this privilege that I don't see existing around me? What do I do with that? Right. So this isn't a matter of like, I have it and I'm just defiant and I choose to accept it. This is like, where is it?
Right. It's about being able to experience or feel it. Yeah. Right. And I think, and she was able to, in her article, I think, address certain privileges that even her being a poor white woman, I can see these things.
Yes.
And I think it was more about what you were talking about, the nuances of it, that yes, she's white, but she's also poor.
Yeah.
And when we talk about poverty, no matter what race you're talking about, there are certain things that impact you or that come with that. So you might be able to relate to, if you're white, you can relate better to a poor black person than you can to a white wealthy person because you have some of the same shared experiences.
Yeah.
So, and then if you look at it, you also may be a single parent.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So there are just so many more nuances and things that can contextualize someone's experiences that sometimes hearing the phrase white privileges kind of oversimplifies something that can have a wide spectrum.
Yeah. And I think when we approach it this way or at least begin to think about it then we're not just labeling.
Right.
Right. We're not just attaching terms to people. And I think this in some ways even helps to kind of complement Ashley's study where she's looking at the individual. Right. This isn't about just looking at a bigger group, but this is about kind of one-on-one how does each person have to wrestle with this in their own way? So I really enjoyed the article, and I think kind of this additional perspective or way of looking at it, I think also kind of proposes, another opportunity for us to think about privilege and advantage in a different way.
Absolutely.
All right. So our third and final contestant here, and we want to kind of preface this a bit by recognizing that this may be a bit controversial. And I don't know if everything else up until this point has also been controversial, but just for the record...
Let's just throw in the controversial soup,
sure.
It feels like everything around this topic is.
Fair enough. So this one comes from an actual video clip of an interview with Morgan Freeman, who is an acclaimed and accomplished actor, one of my favorite actors. Shawshank Redemption is one of my all-time movies. In this clip, Morgan Freeman is in an interview with Mike Wallace from 60 Minutes. And we just want to say, Morgan Freeman, when it comes to these topics, has made a few statements over the years that I think have generated some mixed reviews.
Yes.
So we recognize that maybe hearing that name in this conversation for some could be a bit triggering, because maybe you're thinking about other things that he said before that you may just outright not agree with. But I think kind of what he mentions in this interview is something important to bring to the table. And again, it's for your own consideration. In this interview with Mike Wallace, when asked, how do you get rid of racism, right? So Mike Wallace, a white man, is sitting down with Morgan Freeman, a black man. And by the way, making me think Morgan Freeman was also in Driving Miss Daisy, which was a huge controversy at the time, because I think at the same time, Spike Lee, Do the Right Thing, was also out. And Driving Miss Daisy won the Academy Award over Do the Right Thing.
Right.
And it was kind of seen as like this, like...
Well, in terms of when you look at Driving Miss Daisy, is this black,
yes,
you know, black servant, chauffeur driving around this wealthy white woman. And then when you look at, in comparison to Do the Right Thing,
yes,
people were in different, at odds in which was the better movie, and for very deep and cultural reasons.
Yes. Understandably. And I think Morgan Freeman... lost a lot of fans doing that movie, and I think even to this day people feel a certain way about it. So, but again, in this interview, when he's asked very kind of bluntly, how do we get rid of racism? Morgan Freeman's response simply was, "Stop talking about it." He says, "I'm going to stop calling you a white man, and I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man." I almost sound like Morgan Freeman when I'm saying, let's say this.
You have a bit of a Morgan Freeman kind of voice.
I'm like, wait a minute, am I channeling my inner Morgan Freeman here?
You do a very good impression.
Okay, not on purpose though. And he ends the sentence by saying, "I know you as Mike Wallace, and you know me as Morgan Freeman." What are your thoughts about this?
So I'm going to be honest. I had very conflicting emotions in this statement, and watching the video, and I try to push myself, right? Because my first reaction that I had felt very much aligned with a statement like when people say, "I don't see color," right? And it just bothers me. It just was just kind of like, but we are different, right. You know, we, that is a thing.
Yeah.
And also I thought of, it might minimize what some people might be going through. And this issue of race, that I wish it was that simple, right? I wish it was as simple as us not talking about it and that it would go away.
Yeah.
But we know that it doesn't. And in some way felt irresponsible of Morgan Freeman to say that.
Mm.
So where I try to challenge myself after having that very strong reaction, I was like, okay, let me try to think about it a little bit different. And where I came to was that I was able to agree with his sentiment a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily that is a solution to end racism, but it's more that we're not there yet. We're not in a place where we can do this and have things be okay. You know, it made me think of, I don't know if I told you this, but I started my own very, very small, minuscule silent protest.
Mm.
And and what I decided to do is I refuse moving forward to answer any questions of race in any kind of application.
Wow, okay.
Whether it's bank application, car loans application. Recently, I answered the census. Hmm. And I just refuse to, because I've seen how race has been weaponized, particularly by corporations, and how decisions are made.
Yeah. And policymakers.
Policymakers. And I just don't want to contribute to that. And that makes me feel a little better, even though I know that that's not the answer. But I think that we're not at a place when we can just completely do this. And I wish we were. I wish that we were in a place that when he said this, like, I could feel like,
yeah,
we can do this.
Yeah.
But we're not.
I mean, I don't know that I have much to add to that. I think that's a really great way to put it. I didn't necessarily have as strong of an initial reaction to this as you did, but I can kind of hear your thought process through it. And so it's kind of not so much shutting down this idea of it, but just saying that it's going to take some time and some other things to happen before we can actually make this a reality. I think when I was listening to him say this, and again, just trying to separate the person from the statement,
right.
Although, you know, some may argue that you shouldn't do that. But just thinking about what's being said and the parts that I feel like are relevant and that make sense to me is this idea about the more you address it, the more power you give it.
Right.
Right. It's like the more you feed it, the bigger it grows. And I think that's what I pulled out of this was maybe not necessarily, although I... knowing Morgan Freeman and haven't seen him speak in other venues, I think he may have literally just quite meant never talk about it again.
Yes.
But I am siding with you in regards to we aren't there to be able to do that. However, this idea of it grows the more you talk about it, the more you kind of, the more that it controls your thought process. And, you know, when you look at, and you kind of go on in the interview, and in some other interviews, he kind of further explains, or at least gives a little bit more description of how this type of thinking stifles people, because in their minds, they feel like it's something out of their control,
right?
You know, which it is. I can't control the color of my skin, and to some degree, I can't control how others see that color and,
right.
and what they decide to do with it, right? Like if I'm walking down a sidewalk and someone else is walking in the opposite direction and feels threatened because I look like because I look black, which I am, but if that threatens them and they decide to walk across the street, what do I do with that, right?
Yeah, and I can definitely see that. So you know, if I had like a magic wand and I can just go back in time and be Morgan Freeman's publicist for a second, right? I think, you know, if I was able to do that, my suggestion would be that, you know, when asked such a loaded question, because that was a loaded question.
That's a very loaded question.
And you're asking that of an actor,
yeah.
right? And I think sometimes what people of color and black people are put in positions where they have to have solutions to problems that they didn't create.
And
they are experts just solely because they belong to a particular group. But he's an actor, and that is his area of expertise, and he can talk to you about his experience, but he's not going to solve race problem, right? But when I think about that, I wish he would have said, you know, there's lots of logistical and concrete things we can do to work on the systemic racism that currently exists.
Mm-hmm.
One small thing you can do is maybe stop giving it so much power and stop talking about it. And I think Serena Williams, right? Like, she's famous for knowing, I don't want to be the best women athlete. I want to be the best athlete, right? Because our pronouns and our demographics sometimes become disclaimers. And it's just like, oh, she's the best woman athlete. And it diminishes that word. Whereas, oh, you're the best black actor.
Mm.
And then it becomes a disclaimer. Yeah, no, I want to be the best actor. So I get it when we do it in kind of social ways or ways that don't have significant life or death kind of impact, but more help to shape how we look at each other. But the fact that he mentioned it as the obvious solution is, I think, where I have a problem with it.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think that's a fair statement to make about anyone proposing to have an answer for that question.
Right.
Right? Like you said, and you know, I mean, the show is called 60 Minutes. Like, you're not gonna answer how to solve
racism.
Fair enough. On a show called 60 Minutes. So I've really enjoyed having this conversation, and not just this conversation, but even just, you know, kind of looking at these different viewpoints. I think it's really caused me to have more of an introspective assessment around what my own thoughts are and kind of challenge myself in the ways that I think about this. And as I mentioned before, we're going to leave the links to these articles on our webpage, so you can be able to kind of look at these things on your own and in your own time and share these with your friends. You know, I think talk them through with your colleagues.
Yeah. And you know what? I started this process feeling a very specific kind of way around white privilege. And I came out of it really kind of having a new perspective. And I think moving forward, I'm going to stop using the word privilege and use more the term advantage and disadvantage. And that's something that I really kind of got out of it. And I hope some of you were able to kind of stay with us and in our process and continue to learn more, because these are complex, emotional, ridden kind of problems. And we need to kind of work through some of our innate reactions in order to get to the bottom line and what can potentially help us move forward.
Well said. And as always, we'd love to read your comments on this topic and any other topic that you've listened to from our previous podcast. So as always, we invite you to post, subscribe, visit our website at imopodcast.com and our Instagram, inmyopinion_podcast. And as always, this is just our opinion.
We love to know yours.